Welcome, welcome. This is the Phoenix Suns podcast, episode 47 here on Bright Side of the Sun. And this is Chris Dog, as always, coming at you with Jim Dog, as by popular demand. The addition of dog at the end of a name is what it's all about. So the Chris Dog and the Jim Dog are back. We're going to go ahead and break down the week that was more or less with the Phoenix Suns and a few other topics here. We're going to have a little bit of fun with this podcast. The Suns are not necessarily having a ton of fun as of late, dropping a few games that, you know, earlier in the season, maybe they would have won. But without further ado, we're going to get into this one. This is episode 47, and perfect timing, as there's a amazing movie coming out with the very critically acclaimed actor Keanu Reeves about the 47 Ronin. So hopefully, Jim, we don't go out there leaderless as we are right now with Dave not on the podcast and end up having to go ahead and replay the 47 Ronin. If you're not familiar with that tale, it doesn't end very well for the 47. How are you doing tonight, Jim, after a really fun game that you got to cover? This is recording Tuesday night right after the Memphis game. How are you doing tonight, Jim?
I think we've actually got rid of the whole plum dog thing, that label, that nickname we had going. But the new one that I really like is Ann Myers Drysdale calling Goodwin Archie Griffin. I don't know if you've heard that one. She's dropped that a couple times, and it's not on purpose.
A moment of silence for that miscue on the mic by Ann Myers. You know what? She's getting used to being in front of the mic there, I think, calling the Phoenix Suns games. And Archie Griffin is, you know what, that's a good place to start, actually. I'm glad you mentioned Archie Griffin. Not actually Archie Griffin, obviously, but I'm glad you mentioned Archie Goodwin, because for a night in the NBA, again, recording this Tuesday night, this is going up on Wednesday, for a night in the NBA that saw two rookies in the same game go off for triple doubles with Michael Carter-Williams and Victor Oladipo, both of them getting 20-plus point triple doubles in a double overtime Philadelphia 76ers win. The Phoenix Suns, they go out there with their rookies, and instead of getting, you know, two triple doubles in these amazing performances for the ages, we end up getting a DNP for Alex Len, as well as 12 minutes, 4 of 7 shooting, real quality game there for Archie in garbage time, but 12 minutes for Archie Goodwin. Just a stark difference in rookie productivity tonight from Phoenix to Philadelphia.
A little bit. And one of my favorite comments, actually kind of referring there in the game thread, actually participating in it too, I had fun with that, was when Goodwin was on the fast break, running down the court. He was a little bit out of control, trying to force some contact. He got blocked by Lure, and the ball bounced on the ground a couple times before going out of bounds to Memphis. And one of the commenters wrote that Goodwin just got lured into that one, using the Lure pun there. And Goodwin definitely looked like a rookie, and Alex Len looked like a, well, I guess, nothing, because which is what he's looked like most of the season. So while some of these other teams get to try to enjoy watching their rookies grow as players, we get to wait on Alex Len and hope for better days in the future.
Well, I mean, the 29th pick. So with Archie, and we'll, as the season goes on, you know, we're going to get to kind of grow with the, as I call him, an 18-year-old, and he corrects me, the 19-year-old rookie, you know, kind of growing pains. You know, as I've said obscene amount of times, he is definitely a carbon copy of what a normal 18 or 19 year old kid would look like, and very mature for his age, but, you know, physically needs to grow into his game, and it's going to take some time. He's a 29th pick for a reason. He's a long-term prospect, not a right now prospect. But you hit the nail on the head. I mean, teams like Washington, Philadelphia, kind of, they still get Michael Carter-Williams, but, you know, with Nerlens Noel out, Cleveland, they don't get to watch their top pick play basketball, I guess, if you call what he's been doing playing basketball. Same thing with Phoenix. You know, a lot of folks don't get to watch their top picks. They just gotta, you know, cross their fingers and hope that they come back from injury or just sitting out or whatever they want to call it when they hit the court and they actually get to play. And I like what they're doing with Alex Len, by the way, just taking a step back there. I like that they're not rushing him, they're not forcing him. He's a smart kid that's only going to be productive once he hits the weight room for a full year, maybe a year and a half, to be able to play at this level. So the fact that he's not playing right now, and hopefully strengthening up a little bit and rehabbing and getting stronger and better, I'm completely 100% behind that play versus just throwing him out there to the Wolves.
Well, if he needs to gain some weight, then maybe Marley should make a triple-double sandwich, because that's about the only way Len's going to get one of those sitting over there on the bench.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we got the Channing fries. You know, hopefully we can get something for Alex Len, Archie Goodwin, one of these young guys. I mean, and you know, hopefully Dan's relationship is okay with Phoenix, with the Suns after the way that all ended. But, you know, maybe we'll end up seeing some kind of an Archie Goodwin, Alex Len, maybe the double A meal or something like that for those two. But yeah. With Alex Len, you know, strengthening up, getting a little bit better, we'll see how things go. With the Memphis game tonight, we're used to seeing Memphis with Mark Gasol and Zach Randolph, and instead getting dominated by the backups and the reserves. You watched the game. You covered the game. Kind of give the audience out there kind of a 60-second recap, a verbal recap on top of the one that you've already written, but more of the Jim Kokenauer spiced version of the recap.
The Suns' interior spacing was terrible. The Suns got dominated by Ed Davis, John Luehr, and Kosta Kufos, and just had no answers for those guys inside. They had a brief period in the second quarter when Markieff and Marcus, especially Marcus, were hitting some shots, and the bench unit came in and outplayed Memphis and got him a little bit of a lead and kept him in the game. But the rest of the night, they went cold. They were 7-29 from three-point range, and this team doesn't have any other offensive options if those shots aren't falling. If they're not getting easy buckets on the break and transition or hitting three-pointers, then the offense is stagnant and the team really doesn't have much of a chance out there. And then this play on the defensive end has become a pattern now. They've given up over 45% from the field, or I believe 9 out of 10 opponents now. So it's been basically half their games that they've been allowing teams to shoot at a high clip. They're giving up a bunch of points. And really tonight was the first time that they got punched in the mouth and weren't able to respond at all. And they just got embarrassed in the second half of that game. And it reminded me a lot more of a lot of the losses from last year than any of the games so far this year. And that's actually been something where these games have been getting a little bit looser like that. The Suns had really been playing very competitively. And even in the last round table, I talked how they were kind of playing to the level of their opponents. Well, they played so far below the level of their opponent tonight that it was ridiculous. And hopefully they'll come out angry tomorrow, because you'd have to think that they would be really blazing hot, smoking pissed after getting stultified like they did tonight in that game.
Yeah, with this game, and the game kind of broke open for those that watched it, and not those guys that were watching a lot of college basketball like I was today. But it really broke open in that third quarter. I mean, it's kind of obvious when you look at the box score and you just simply look at 36-20 with the scoring margin. But a lot of it comes down to the fact that they were just giving up buckets inside. Of those 36 points, Jim, 24 were in the paint. 24 points in the paint in one quarter. That's something that a normal team would be frowning upon giving up in a game, probably, you know, 24 points in the paint, 24-30 or something like that. You don't want to give up a ton of those, but to give up 24 points in the paint in one single quarter, just, I mean, that's a death nail on a team, especially when you're not able to knock down threes. Like you were saying, they went 1 of 6 in that quarter, and then the Grizzlies were just laying the ball up off of second chance points.
Yeah, the Grizzlies actually connected on 10 consecutive shots, made 10 straight field goals in that quarter, and getting easy shots, points in the paint, that's the way you do it, and a lot of those weren't contested. The Grizzlies seemed to be able to get weak side dunks at will, and then, you know, even when the Suns were there, they just seemed defenseless. The Grizzlies would put a little post move, throw up a little 5-6 hand, little hook shot, and the Suns just really didn't seem to be able to do anything at all to stop them.
Yeah, and as you mentioned before, like the last 9 games at the shooting, I'm just going to use a smaller sample size, and that's the last 4 games, including tonight. They're giving up 51.5 points per game in the paint. I'm not going to like allude to that being worse in the NBA or anything like that, because I don't have those stats in front of me, but that's obviously not very good when you're giving up 51.5 points a game in the paint. And then for the most part, I mean, in any given game, you're going to give up probably about, you know, 15 to 20 points or so at the free throw line. I mean, that's probably a general average for the NBA. They gave up 13 tonight. And in their last 3 to 4 games, they were giving up about 15, 18, 20 free throws made in the game. So when you're giving up and you're just giving teams, you're spotting them 65 points where they're pretty easy. I mean, free throws, layups, putbacks, points in the paint. When you're spotting teams 65 to 70 points, and then after that, they have the ability to hit mid-range shots, hit threes, score in transition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you're telling a team, hey, you got to score 40 tough points tonight to get to 100, and we're a team that gives up 100 pretty easily. I mean, the Suns' defense, unfortunately, has kind of fallen by the wayside when that was kind of something you could see them potentially hanging their hat on with their athleticism, their speed, their youth, Miles Plumlee holding down the fort early in the season, blocking shots, the two-point guards, you know, putting a lot of pressure full court. Kind of seems like a lot of that is going away gradually as teams are getting the scouting report. And, you know, the top-heavy part of the season where they played really well, starting off 5-2, starting to slowly but surely dwindle with the way they played 4-7 in the past 11 games. They're kind of starting to maybe taper back off to that pace that what we were thinking at the beginning of the season. Is that kind of a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think so. And it potentially could become worse quickly because a couple of these last games where they've been getting shown up on the defensive end, you know, these last two specifically, Memphis and Utah, these aren't offensive juggernauts. In terms of offensive rating, the Grizzlies are 20th in the league and Utah Jazz is 27th. So the Suns have been getting brutalized by these teams. Another team that had their way with us recently in a couple games was the Kings, which is a middle-of-the-pack team. But the Western Conference has most of the elite offenses in the league. If you go down, and I'm looking at the list, I just pulled it up right now here, Houston 1, Portland 3, the Clippers 4, Pelicans 5, Mavericks 6, Nuggets 7, Timberwolves 9, Spurs 10, Thunder 11, Warriors 12. And the Suns are going to start hitting a pocket of their schedule where they're playing a lot more of these teams. They're playing a lot of these Western Conference teams that are just ahead of them in the standings where they are right now. So this could kind of spiral downward for them if they can't figure out exactly what's going wrong with them, where they've been getting attacked, and if they can fix it.
Now, with this, would you consider the law of averages of probably being something that Phoenix fans and the Suns fans need to get themselves a little bit more acclimated with, especially with where the team was supposed to be at the beginning of the season versus how they started and kind of where they're trending? Is this kind of the law of averages in what you're looking at?
I think so. A lot of people thought the Suns were going to be a pretty bad team this year. And then when they got off to a pretty decent start and had a little bit more sustainable success than, let's say, Philadelphia did over in the Eastern Conference, they turned some heads and people thought, well, this team isn't as bad as we thought they were. And I still don't think they're as bad as some people thought they were, myself included. But sometimes the losses don't happen quite where you think they're going to happen, but the end result still gets you close to where you thought they were going to be. And I still think it's very possible that this could be a 25 to 30 win team, and they just got some of their wins out of the way at the beginning of the schedule. I could still be wrong, but when I'm looking at some of these other teams that the Suns would be competing with for playoff spots or to even get to a respectable level, a 500 record, whatever, I don't see that the talent that the Suns have is commensurate with teams like the Golden State Warriors or the Minnesota Timberwolves, even some of these, and especially not teams like the Rockets and the Clippers way ahead of them. I just, the Suns, you know, is their ceiling, is it still possible that maybe they can win 40 games or so and finish with the 10th best record in the Western Conference? Well, maybe that's still possible. I misread things before, but especially with this team even so far this season, obviously I picked them way too low. But I don't look at this team and see them still competing for that spot like some people do. And I think that this is getting closer to where the real Phoenix Suns are this year.
And I think that's a fair assessment. Me and Dave, I think it was 2 weeks ago or last week, we were kind of projecting the schedule a little bit, and we were getting out, looking into kind of where the Suns would be at the 25-game mark, which is where he feels is more of a proper assessment of a team. I think that you can determine a style and an identity earlier in the season than 25 games, but I've talked to a handful of other NBA folks in terms of like writers and people like that that all kind of say more or less the same thing. Like, you probably want to have about 20 to 25, maybe even 35 to 40 games before you want to try and identify a team and say someone's great, someone's bad, someone's a playoff team. At that point, the season's almost over. You hit the halfway mark and you're like, oh, now this team's good. But looking at the future schedule, 25 game mark is going to come in about 7 games. We talked about them playing to their opponents, and I talked to Channing Frye and PJ Tucker about recently the Suns kind of not, it's hard to phrase this without sounding insulting, but kind of getting a big head about themselves and thinking that they've arrived. And that's not to insult them. That's not them going out there being cocky or anything like that. That's just them going out there going, hey, we've achieved something. That's human nature. Going, we've achieved something. We're now good. We're going to be able to sustain this. And it just wasn't necessarily maybe there yet. Maybe they just kind of hit that marker early. They were surprising some folks, and now it's coming down to earth. But the next 7 games to hit that 25-game mark, right now they're 9-9, 18 games played. They go to Houston and Toronto this week. They have the Lakers on the road, and then they run 3 home games with Sacramento, Golden State, San Antonio, and Denver. I think that takes us, Denver on the road will be game 25. That'll be on Friday, December the 20th. So the next 7 games, those are their opponents. They have 4 at home. They have 3 on the road. 2 of those 3 road games are against playoff quality teams, and the Lakers are somewhere around where the Suns are at right now. Is there a chance? Can this team go 4-3? Can they be an above 500 team at that 25-game marker, therefore maybe showing that this is probably a 500 team throughout the season?
No, I don't think so. I think that if you look at that, I think they lose a minimum of 4 of those games. So for me, I would say best case would be 12-13, but I see a lot more likely 11-14. That would be my guess. And, you know, it could, I think eventually it'll get worse from there. It'll start to trend downwards away from that 500 mark. That even with the way they started, it can be hard to gauge a team even through 25 games sometimes, because you can get off to a little bit of a better start. I think, what was it, in 2009-10, the Suns were a completely bipolar team as they went through that season with the ups and downs through the different parts of their schedules. And I forget what they started off, but I think they had like a 12-19 stretch in the middle and then finished something gaudy, like 28-7, something like that to finish the season. So there was like actually almost like 3 seasons the Suns played within that season. And I'm still of the opinion that this is more of a hot start. One of the sites that I've been kind of looking at recently that does projections for teams, kind of like a Hollinger thing as the season goes on, is Team Rankings. And right now, before the blowout tonight, they had the Suns slated at 37 wins, which is going to go down based off of what they did tonight, because it's a fluid type of thing that evolves as the season progresses. So they probably have the Suns, you know, around 35 wins somewhere, I would guess, now, and a couple more losses as they hit this part of their schedule. I think that has a chance to go down. Now, part of that is just going to be the Suns playing a lot more of these Western Conference teams. So the Suns, you know, could win maybe like that 30 to 35 games. And if they were playing in the East, that might be good enough to, like, the Suns might be the 3rd seed. But they're not in the East. They're playing in the West. So they're more likely to finish, say, 12th and a couple spots out of that and towards the back end of the lottery.
I like that shout out to Team Rankings, by the way. That's my guy David Hess runs a lot of that site, at least the college side of it. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good site to go. There's a lot of sites now when you talk about data, by the way, that you can just kind of go to, and there's just data on data on data on data. It's just racks on racks of data for you folks out there that understand general references unlike I do. That's probably the peak of me giving a general relevant reference that's going on right now. But yeah, I mean, the data I would imagine is probably slanting towards the Suns being one of the worst five teams in the league with the way they've been playing. I mean, you can't give up 50% shooting. You can't give up 50 points in the paint. You can't give up, you know, 15 to 20 free throws a night. You can't, I mean, just when you do those things that make things that much easier for teams, and now they have a scouting report on you and teams are ready for what you're going to do. I mean, Jeff Hornacek's a great young head coach so far. I really respect what he's done. I like what he's doing. He's leaps and bounds ahead of some of his peers that are first year head coaches, especially some that might play in a place called the Barclays Center. With Coach Hornacek, at least he keeps a lid on his cups, and he's got a great staff down there. But I mean, it's the ebb and flow of a season is going to come. And as we talked about this before, before we jumped on, I don't think it would shock anybody outside of Phoenix, Arizona, if this team in a 20 game window went through like a 2-18 stretch or a 3-17 stretch. It wouldn't shock anybody outside of Phoenix because they have their blinders off. We have our blinders on. We live out here. We cover the team. You know, I would imagine most Brightsiders are fans of the team. So, you know, most people are going to, you know, see when this team starts to struggle, it's going to be more of a shock to them because they gave you what the good Suns can look like. But, you know, ebb and flow of a season, you know, the law of averages, eventually the Suns are going to come back down to earth. Or, you know, hey, maybe they'll surprise everybody. Maybe they'll be like I think, which is a fringe 500 team, like a 35 to 40 win team. But I'm glad we disagree on that because we agree way too much, which is just weird for our personalities that we agree with each other. But I'm glad we disagree on that because I do think the Suns can be a 35 to 40 win team, which means that they can kind of more or less keep up with this 500 pace. Maybe be a few games under 500 in that second half.
Yeah, there are different ways to look at it. You can, on one side, you can look at it and maybe this is optimistic or maybe it's just a realistic way of interpreting the data one direction, and you can say that the Suns played all these competitive games early on in the season and they beat Portland a couple times and they've showed that they can play with this energy and that they're capable of locking teams down defensively and being scrappy, and that Goran Dragic and Bledsoe have missed some time and so they'll be able to meld together and they've actually played through this adversity and this type of stuff. Or on the other hand, you could look at it, and whether this is pessimistic or just another way of interpreting all the data and everything that you have in front of you, that after a 5-2 start where teams really didn't have any tape on the Suns, they have basically gone 4-7 since and possibly 4-8 tomorrow after a very likely loss at Houston, that they've been getting blowed up on defense, that they've been one of the worst defensive teams in the league over this last 9-game stretch, that outside of two wins against Portland, which might be a team that the Suns just happened to match up well against, they matched up really well against Memphis last season when they were a completely awful team, that they don't have a single real good win to hang their hat on, and now they're starting to get a little bit looser in all these games, that there aren't any close 5-point margins, that they're starting to be 7-point and 8-point and 11-point and 19-point type of games, and that things are really starting to get away from the team. So, you know, which team are they? Are they one of those teams? You know, it remains to be seen. I think we know that they're not a really, really good team, but we don't know, I guess. I don't know for sure whether they're a mediocre team or a bad team.
Yeah, and there was one stat, and you mentioned before that you probably see the Suns at about 11-14, 12-13 at best when the stretch ends and we hit that 25-game marker, which is clearly not an exact science, by the way. It's just something that I've talked to a handful of other people to get an opinion on and see where they would kind of draw a line in the sand and start to kind of identify what a team actually is. And 25 was, if not the number, it was about the average. So with 11-14, I saw a stat earlier today, and I apologize for not having it right now readily available. I wasn't going to talk about this until, you know, now that it just got brought up. But when you look at 11-14, the Suns could potentially be after 25 games. That right now at 11-14 would put the Suns probably at about the fourth, maybe the fifth seed out in the Eastern Conference, and which is just bewildering, the fact that there are currently right now two teams above 500 in the Eastern Conference, and there are three teams that are at least at or around 500. At 11 and 14, the Suns would have a 44.0 winning percentage, or .440 if you're doing it that way, and which would put them at the fourth seed and would give them tied for the fifth best record in the Eastern Conference. Now, if they were that marker out in the Western Conference, they wouldn't be sniffing the playoffs. They would be one of the bottom three teams. So it's kind of interesting how there's only three good teams in the East as of right now, and there's kind of technically only two bad teams, maybe two or three bad teams out in the West. If we could transplant the Suns to the Eastern Conference, Jim Kochenour, would they make some noise out there in the Eastern Conference?
They'd also be playing against a lot of weaker competition. So if you look to that list, instead of playing against the Wizards and the Celtics and the Hawks and the Bobcats, I mean, that's who they'd be playing. They'd be playing those teams, you know, instead of teams like the Clippers, Houston, Dallas, and Golden State. So I would think that that winning percentage would likely be a lot better. I think that even I, who think that the Suns are still a bad team, I would go on the record right now, flip them conferences and the Suns make the playoffs. So the East is just really terrible. I don't know why exactly that is. I don't know whether it's ownership, whether people just don't like playing in some of those cities anymore, that some of them, like Brooklyn and the Knicks, you know, just try to go out and star grab and spend money stupidly, that what exactly that is there. But the Eastern Conference, they don't even deserve to have a playoff team. There almost needs to be some kind of restructuring to make this fair, because really there are 13 teams in the Western Conference that might be better than all but two of the teams in the Eastern Conference. There are five teams outside of the playoffs in the West right now that I think are probably every bit as good as Washington, who's third right now in the East.
Yeah, and the stat, and it's killing me that I don't have the stat right in front of me, because I'm trying to look that up now that we're talking about this, but the stat that was hilarious was that the East versus the West coming into tonight, so obviously things have happened tonight, but coming into tonight, there was 82 games played, so an NBA season has happened cross-conference there, you know, with the East versus the West, and the record was something along the lines of 56 and 26. I believe it was in the 50s to in the 20s, obviously. It was a very, very good record. It would be a record that most Suns fans would love to have this year for their team, but he was basically making the joke that the Eastern Conference is one big, gigantic lottery team because of the fact that right now they're 26 and 56 or whatever the stat is, the exact number, against the Western Conference, which I thought was comical, because when you look at it, and I put together, you know, mock drafts and I put together the standings and getting everything organized for the NBA draft stuff that I do, and I'm sitting there sorting the standings and trying to get everything organized, and every time I do it, I put all the records in order, then I'll slot it based on, you know, the eight teams from each conference that make the playoffs to create the lottery, and usually when I do that, there ends up being about two or three Eastern Conference teams that are actually in the top 16 records, and I got to do a whole lot of copy and paste shifting and moving around and putting a whole bunch of good Western Conference teams in the lottery, even though those teams have dramatically better records than the Eastern Conference folks. So the law of averages, let's just put it this way. I guarantee there won't be five teams with an under 500 record in the Eastern Conference playoffs this year. It's funny to think about that, and it's an interesting narrative to play, but more than likely, at the most, there's going to be one to two or two or three teams that are at or under 500 in the East, but it's just at this point in the season, it's just a weird anomaly that there's that many teams under 500 and that's their record against the West. I mean, other than Miami and Indiana, it's what is out there in the East. There's nothing, whereas the Western Conference has four or five teams that are over 500 that'll be drafting in the lottery.
Well, that's only because of the imbalanced schedule, though, because of playing 52 interconference games and only 30 games against the other conference. Because right now, in the East, seeds 3 through 8 all have winning records against the Eastern Conference. which means all six of those teams have losing records against the Western Conference.
Yep.
So if that was actually like a 41-41 split, I think you'd have a very good likelihood of having three or four teams in the Eastern Conference make the playoffs with losing records. I think that there's going to be several teams that are just going to squeak above that mark and with terrible records against the Western Conference. That's just a really bad conference.
But you're starting to see some things, not to cut you off, but you're starting to see some things trend correctly. Like Washington at one point was the second worst team in the NBA with two wins. I think they were like 2-7 at that point. And now they're 8-9. They're trending upwards. Atlanta's roughly a 500 club. Toronto's playing a little bit better. Charlotte's dealing with some injuries, unfortunately. So, I mean, those little things right there, you know, Detroit's playing a little better. They just beat Miami tonight. So that's what I'm talking about, where those teams they're trending up. I mean, I think these teams started off just horrendously bad. I think at one point the top of like the top 20 teams in the NBA, almost every one of them were Western Conference teams except for Utah. So, I mean, there was a point in the season where like everyone in the East was at the bottom and everyone in the West is at the top except for one or two teams. I don't know. I still think the Western Conference is obviously far and away superior, but let me ask you this, Jim, and we'll kind of close it on this note before we look ahead to the next couple of games. When you look at the Western Conference, for as deep as they are in at least 500 or better teams, of those teams, how many do you actually see being able to raise a banner and put on a championship ring at the end of the season? Because I would struggle to say that it's more, that it's all of them. I mean, it's only a handful.
Yeah, I would still say that there's, for my money, only four teams, two teams in the West, two teams in the East, Indiana, Miami, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City. I think that the East is still, you know, probably, maybe even better at the top with Indiana and Miami. I would actually say that I think they are probably better at the top, Indiana, Miami, than San Antonio, Oklahoma City in the West. So there is a lot more depth in the Western Conference, but I mean, I don't see Portland, the Clippers, Houston. I don't see those guys as real contenders.
Yeah, and I think we're on the same page. Because when I was looking at it, I've said all along, Houston and L.A., the Clipper version of L.A., just feel inherently flawed. Like there's something wrong with them that's going to bite them in the butt in the playoffs. They're missing substance. They're missing just that playoff championship feel for a team. Portland's the new kid on the block that's obviously playing amazing basketball except for against the Phoenix Suns. And then you have San Antonio and Oklahoma City, just two teams you can rely on as long as they're fully healthy. And then I think Indiana and Miami are the two best teams in the NBA, so there's that. I mean, they only have two teams above 500, but guess what? Those two teams are the best two teams in the league, and I don't think the margin is very close. So we're on the same page with that. I think there's four teams that can win a championship, and I think if we're going to rank them 1 through 4, the East has the two best teams in the NBA. So let's look ahead for Phoenix. We've jumped off topic a little bit here talking about other teams, so I apologize, Suns fans out there. But there are 29 other teams, so every now and then we're going to talk about them a little bit. But looking ahead to the Suns' schedule, we have on the road tonight, the Phoenix Suns are in Toronto, or sorry, that's Friday, but tomorrow they're playing as well. How do you see the Suns' week going as before the next time we record? So we're going to record next week on Tuesday, and the Suns between now and then are going to be in Houston, at home against Toronto, and then they'll be playing the Lakers that night. How do you see those three games going, Jim?
I think they'll lose again tomorrow night at Houston. The Toronto Raptors game at home should be a win. And then the Lakers game, that might be interesting. I wonder, do you know if there's any chance that Kobe's going to be playing in that game?
The last thing that I heard from, in terms of like reading things online, was that Kobe was, a Friday date was placed on there that he could be activated and potentially play. I don't know if that was last Friday or this Friday. But, hey, either way, that puts him in a position to maybe play against the Suns on Tuesday. That would be interesting. You're right.
Which, if he does, then even coming back from that injury with all the rust, he'll probably go for 50. So that would be a loss.
Have
a crappy little team over.
Well, pause right there real quick. 50 points or 50 shots?
I don't know. Kobe just has that deep-seated hatred. He's got a special place in his cold, dead black heart for the Phoenix Suns. But even without him, you have to give the Lakers a nod in that game. I think that they've been playing fairly similar in terms of level of basketball and that game being in LA, then you have to give them the nod. So I would say 1 and 2. It's possible some go 2 and 1, but I say 1 and 2. Winning on the road is hard, and especially if you're not a very good team, winning on the road is very hard. And the Suns, I don't think they have a win on the road against a team with a winning record, do they?
I think they have a couple of moral victories. They played really well against San Antonio, obviously, played really well against Oklahoma City. I don't think they have an actual victory. They have a couple of moral victories, though. Yeah, with the Suns and the Lakers, I mean, you got the fourth worst defense in the NBA, and the Phoenix Suns are technically tied for 14th, so they're actually on the top half of the swing there. But if we're looking at recent trends of giving up 100 points, it feels like every night for the past 2 weeks, the Phoenix Suns and the Los Angeles Lakers, for all things considered, for the record, for championship ambition, for lottery picks, whatever your favorite thing you want to put on, whatever hat you want to wear, Steve Nash narratives, Kobe Bryant's deep-seated hatred, Mike D'Antoni, you know, smiling Wes Johnson, it's going to be a game that'll probably be in the hundreds for each team, and somebody's going to get a victory. But I look at it the same as you. I think this can probably end up being a 1 and 2 week. But, you know, we've seen stranger things happen. We can see them pull off the win against the Lakers. Utah just beat Houston, so that whole substance factor I was telling you about with Houston, where I don't quite know why, but it just doesn't feel like a championship team. The Suns could easily sneak one out. Maybe Goran goes off on his former team.
Yeah, anything's possible. And I guess the Suns do have a win on the road against a team with a winning record. They dismantled the Pelicans and that dastardly Pierre in the fourth game of the season back when New Orleans was 1-3.
The 500 New Orleans Hornets, who are now minus Anthony Davis and will probably be an under 500 team. So that win against a team that's currently 500 or better is probably going to go away in their next game.
Their signature victory. So
yeah.
But yeah, anything's possible. But yeah, 1 and 2 is what I see, and I just hopefully the Suns don't get taken thrown over a stump in any of these games like they just did tonight, because that's not a whole lot of fun to watch. I don't like to do game coverage when I have to name John Boer the player of the game.
Yeah, that's probably not ideal. But hey, you know what? They threw Orlando over a stump before they scored a little bit and made it closer. They threw Portland over a stump. They've done it themselves. They should have pasted Denver by like 40 back in early November, but they ended up letting them score some points at the end as the reserves played the reserves. So, you know, the Suns have had their fair share of shellacking other teams, so they're probably going to get theirs given back to them every now and then. But yeah, that's about it. That's the Phoenix Suns podcast here, episode 47. Jim, any parting words, any wise words for the audience?
Nothing wise. You kind of twisted my arm into doing this at the last moment because I was like the backup plan. I'm like the late night booty call when the date with the hot chick that you had lined up didn't quite follow through the way you wanted to. So no wise words from me tonight. I'm just glad to be included.
No, you're like the three white guys at the end of North Carolina's bench that get to go out there when they're up by 40 in the final game of the season on senior night. That's who you are, Jim.
Absolutely. I'm having my moment like John Lohr.
There you go. Yeah, not the backup, or I shouldn't say you weren't way out there at the end of the bench, but you were definitely the backup plan, because we had to change up plans on the fly tonight because of things getting canceled. But we'll hopefully have some cool stuff coming for you soon, guys, in terms of guests and having some different people on. I'm sure you're by now sick of myself, Dave, and Jim, and our trio of opinions. So hopefully we can have some special guests on soon, and we'll be back next week. Episode 48.
Next time Zach Randolph has an ingrown toenail, you know my number, Chris.
Gotcha.